Welcome to Legend Lore with Luis and Lauren, where we talk about Pathfinder 2nd Edition.
I'm Luis, and I'm a developer at Paizo working on the Pathfinder Lost Omens line. I've been playing tabletop RPGs for over 15 years, written for dozens of Pathfinder products, and I also write the Monsters Physique blog here on the No Direction Network.
And I'm Lauren. I've been playing for almost 20 years. I write the Dear Dova Queen advice column and the Bend the Knee blogs here on No Direction Network. You can also watch me play in the Adventurous, Stellar, Fall of Plaguestone, and Three Ring Adventure podcasts. And this week, we're talking about The Fighter.
Well, before we get started, I just want to say, just because we know a lot of what we're talking about when it comes to Pathfinder, we want to remind you that we're not providing any official answers. We're here to offer advice, and you can use it however you like. Remember that the official word from Paizo is the only official ruling, but don't forget that it's your game. Do what works best for your table.
So, what is a fighter? I mean, sure, this sounds like an esoteric question. We know that it's one of the classes in Pathfinder 2nd Edition. We know it's a prototypical class that dates all the way back to the first version of D&D that Gygax wrote. But what do we really think about them, you know? Like, if you think about pop culture, the Starship Troopers might be fighters. Gimli, the Punisher, Worf from Star Trek.
Yeah, I mean, fighters are all over the place, and a lot of the time, we don't use the word fighter to describe them. We might call them warriors, we might call them soldiers. You know, it varies, but the basic concept is person who's good at combat, person who's good at fighting, a fighter. So they've been around probably forever. We've always had warriors and stuff in stories, so it just, they take different shapes and whatnot throughout history and pop culture. But in Pathfinder, they mean something very specific, which is actually pretty much what they mean in pop culture and stories and stuff, which is person who's good at combat. But fighter is really pretty much the go-to combat person. There's no better option for fighting than and choosing different fighting styles and different weapon styles than the fighter.
And sure, an argument can be made that barbarians are great in combat and melee combat. Champions are great in melee combat. And some other unique builds are also great in melee combat. And nobody's ever going to tell you that that's wrong. But the fighter is just more of the generalist. They're going to be great in almost every combat situation. The fighter's just always prepared. They have the right tools and they know how to use them.
And from a design standpoint, the fighter is kind of meant to be the ultimate offensive attacker. Barbarians and champions and rangers and rogues, they all have their combat prowess. They're pretty much almost on par with fighter a lot of the time. Fighter does get ahead in the long run, but they all have their specific niches that they kind of fall into. Fighters are best at overall attacking. They hit more often and just will regularly be able to deal out damage. A barbarian can hit quite a bit, but it's more focused on doing lots of damage and may not hit as often. Rogue is, you know, all about maneuverability and finesse in the battlefield. Champion uses divine power and all that, but the fighter is just a straight go-to. I will try to hit as often as possible and just keep dealing damage and keep fighting.
And there's really a lot of different roles that the fighter can fill while they're doing that. Your fighter can be a great tank. The classic sword and board is never a bad decision. You can be two-handed weapons and just do tons of melee damage. You can do a whole bunch of range DPS. You can be some kind of hybrid in between the two of them.
Yeah, the fighter really is designed with the most options to cover as many bases as possible. There is no go-to build for a fighter anymore. There's lots of, you know, a handful that are usually the ones that most people gravitate to. But if you find a really interesting weapon that has really interesting properties, or just want to emulate something you've seen in movies or TV or whatever, the fighter probably has a way to do that or get pretty close because of how many options they have.
So the question is, though, how does the fighter fit the Batman test?
How is a fighter like Batman? So a fighter, as we mentioned, is very versatile and is trained with pretty much any weapon that they can find, at least in terms of game mechanics. So I think that translates to the way Batman has prepared and trained with lots of martial arts, lots of different weapons, lots of gadgets. The fighter is kind of ready to go with whatever combat situation they're thrown into, much like Batman is.
Especially if he has enough time to prepare.
Yes, fighters actually even have built-in mechanics that explain kind of the I'm preparing in advance for combat later, kind of like Batman does.
Now, all this talk of concept is great, but nothing in Pathfinder is just a concept. These are also mechanics, and we need to talk about these class features that make a fighter work in Pathfinder 2nd Edition.
Yeah, absolutely. So if we pull up our fighter in our handy-dandy core rulebook, the first thing that you'll see is the key ability score. Every class gets a key ability score that kind of represents this is the ability score you want to focus on to do well with the thing your class does. Fighters, being a fighting class, actually have two options when it comes to choosing a key ability score, either strength or dexterity. If you want to go with power, you go strength. If you want to go with finesse and agility, you go dexterity. So it's actually already an interesting choice that you get compared to some of the other classes where you're locked into just one ability score.
You don't start with the 12 hit points plus your con modifier like a barbarian does, but your 10 hit points is still kind of the gold standard of really good hit points. So you are not a lightweight when it comes to taking hits. On top of that, you're going to be an expert in perception at level 1. As the fighter, you are good at finding your targets so that you can engage them.
And then after that, you look at your saving throws, which say you're an expert in fortitude, which makes sense. You're typically a hardy warrior. You're an expert in reflex, able to dodge attacks and things like that. And you're trained in will, which every class will be trained in all the saving throws. So that's kind of your lower saving throw here, but you'll be able to make up for it later with your other class features.
Fitting with the idea that your key ability can be either strength or dex, you are given the choice of one of two skills to be trained in automatically, acrobatics or athletics, depending on what you're trying to do with the character. On top of that, fighters are extremely well known for the number of skills they get, clearly rivaling a rogue at 3 plus your intelligence modifier. So if you wanted to be an intelligence-based fighter, which I don't think is yet a really great idea in 2nd edition, though you could make it work in 1st edition, you're not going to get a lot of skills otherwise.
Yeah, and for people coming in from 1st edition, you'll know that the fighter in 1st edition had 2 skills plus intelligence modifier, just flat out, you got nothing for free. Here you're already getting acrobatics or athletics, and then plus 3 additional ones for free, which is already more than the fighter would get the first time around, but with the fact that 2nd edition has condensed some of the skills here, so something like climb and swim are no longer separate, they're just athletics, you're getting a lot more bang for your buck with all of these skills here too.
Now here's the main takeaway. If you remember nothing else from this discussion, remember that fighters begin with expert in weapons. This is huge, especially at the lower levels. You are critting more often, you're hitting more often, you're more reliable in dealing your damage.
Yeah, you start as an expert in both simple weapons and martial weapons, which cover the majority of the weapons available in the game. And you're also trained in advanced weapons, which not many classes will get training in. And in fact, I think fighter is the only one that could potentially get an advanced weapon all the way up to legendary training or legendary proficiency if you invest properly, which is, you know, that's what the fighter is. They're the perfect weapon master, and they're the only ones that can get that good with the wildest, most powerful weapons.
Now, tell me, Luis, I want to hear your opinion on this. The advanced weapons are really cool, but are they really ever worth taking that -2, essentially, to use them when you could just pick up a longsword and do better?
It depends. If you combine the fighter with an ancestry feat, for example, you might have a way to get an advanced weapon, but still be just as good with it as if you were fighting with a martial weapon. The dwarves, for example, have some advanced weapons that are dwarf weapons. Specifically, they have the dwarf trait. But if you take the dwarf weapon training ancestry feat, it says, hey, this advanced dwarf weapon treat it as if it were a martial weapon instead when you figure out your proficiency bonus. So suddenly, this advanced weapon is, you're just as good with it as if you were using a martial weapon, and it means you can keep up with, and everyone else is using martial and simple weapons. And then later on, the fighter does have a feat that says your advanced weapons, your proficiency with that is the same as it is with martial and simple weapons, so it stays on par with those. It's really up to you. The advanced weapons do have interesting things you can do, but there are ways to keep up with the rest of the training and proficiency right away, right out the gate, if you're willing to take the ancestry feat for that.
And finally, as a fighter, you gotta stay alive. You are going to be having attacks coming in at you, but you're ready for this. You are trained in all types of armor.
Yeah, and unlike some of the other classes, it says all armor. It doesn't you that. So if you want to use heavy armor, go for it. If you want medium or light armor, you are not locked into any specific thing. The barbarian, for example, only has training in light armor or medium armor, so there's no way you can be a heavy full plate barbarian without some extra work to do so. So the fighter's ready to kind of fill any combat role and do any kind of fantasy or concept you want with both their great proficiency in all weapons and their proficiency in all armor.
Now, all fighters are going to begin play with a holdover staple from Pathfinder First Edition. They all get Attack of Opportunity, and nobody else starts out with that. So you're the only one that can take advantage of people who aren't paying enough attention when they try and get away from you.
Yeah, Attack of Opportunity is a very rare resource nowadays. There are other classes that can get it, but not for a couple of levels. And the only other ways outside of Barbarian, Champion, or Fighter that you can get Attack of Opportunity is to take the multi-class dedication. So it's a very big deal that you get Attack of Opportunity, and it works for pretty much any fighter build beyond anything that is ranged. Any melee-based build will be able to take advantage of Attack of Opportunity, which is great. It means you can, one, you know, control the battlefield just a bit better that way, but also get to play with the action economy using your reactions more often than other classes might right out of the gate.
Now, at face value, it looks like the fighter has fewer terms of flavorful choices as, say, a lot of the other classes. For example, if you pick up a druid, you can be a plant druid, a storm druid, an animal druid, and a... what's the other one?
Storm druid, plant druid...
Wild druid. So the fighter doesn't have those kinds of options when you just open up to the advancement and see what you get when going from 1 to 20. But this is deceptively simple. It seems like they don't have those kind of flavorful choices, but in reality, for the fighter, it's all moved into their feats section. The fighter is feats, feats, and feats, and each of these helps inform you and build your own kind of fighter.
Absolutely. I know that's one thing the design team intentionally chose to do is not give the fighter a quote-unquote subclass like they do for many of the other classes, because really you're going to design your own subclass. You're going to find the way you want to fight and then pick all the feats you want for that anyway. So there's no point in kind of choosing to force you into that right away, because who knows, maybe you'll decide that the way you fight require some of the feats that are more appropriate for one-handed combat and some of the feats required for two-handed combat, because you have a weapon that lets you, you know, wield it with two hands and you swap back and forth. If you had to choose the one-handed style or two-handed style, you would kind of lock yourself out of that cool flexibility and building the way you want to fight via the fighter feats.
And I kind of love that you're able to do that too.
The very first fighter I played in the playtest did just that. I saw that the Bastard Sword had the two-hand trait, so it's like, oh, I'm going to tick some of those feats and some of those other feats and do both as I need during combat.
That's the great thing about the fighter, is just being so flexible depending on what the combat needs. As a fighter, you're also going to start out with shield block. That's not particularly noteworthy. A lot of classes start with shield block, but when you need it, you need it.
It is... there for people who want it. Not every class, not every fighter is going to be making use of it, but like you said, when you want it, it's going to be pretty helpful, especially if you choose to focus on it quite a bit.
Like most of the other classes, at second level, you'll get a skill feat, and every two levels after, you get another. Bravery returns to the fighters in Pathfinder 2nd Edition, but this time it's a little better. Instead of just increasing your saves against fear effects, it's also going to increase all of your saves. For will, all of your will saves will increase to expert, and it still kind of specializes in fear, because when you roll a success against a fear effect, it counts as a critical success instead. And anytime you get frightened, you're fighting by one condition point left. You are unflappable as a fighter.
Yes, I'm playing through the Strange Aeons AP right now as a fighter, and fear comes up quite a bit. And after getting bravery, it's been not so much of a deal when suddenly, oh, someone casts fear. Okay, I get fear one. Actually, I don't get anything. I'm not feared at all. I have no frighten at all because the bravery just keeps me going. It's very useful. It's been great.
And at third level, again, you get the same as most other classes, a general feat and a skill increase. At fifth level, you get the same as other classes, ability boosts and ancestry feats. But the fun part comes at fifth level, you also gain fighter weapon mastery. So you can pick a whole group of weapons. I'm going to be the one who uses spears. And with those spears, at fifth level, you already have master proficiency with that weapon.
This is where the fighter starts getting ahead of everyone else. Master proficiency is, I mean, +2 more to your attack bonuses. Doesn't sound like much if you're used to first edition or other games, but it means a lot in Pathfinder 2nd edition. It puts you so far ahead. You're going to be critting so much more often. You're going to be hitting so much more often. And in addition to that, you get access to your critical specialization with that weapon group. If you pick hammers, you can knock down people. If you pick pole arms, you can push them around. You get to play a lot more with the weapons you have. And suddenly, if you've been fighting with a sword the whole time, you choose swords, and you find a different sword. I've been fighting with a longsword this whole time, but I found a really cool great sword as a part of my treasure. Because it applies to the entire weapon group, I don't have to feel bad about dropping my longsword to get this cool new greatsword all of a sudden.
And on top of that, retraining in 2nd edition isn't the most tedious thing. If you're built for using one-handed weapons like longswords, it's not hard to switch out some of those for two-handed feats.
Yeah, if your GM is willing to give you, a week or two of time, you'll probably be able to get your entire build rebuilt as needed.
Now, at 7th level, you're going to get Battlefield Surveyor, which increases your perception and mastery. Again, very critical. If ninjas are sneaking up on you, you're going to be happy that you've got a master perception proficiency. And also at 7th level, you get the big dice. You get weapon specialization. Extra 2 damage if you are an expert, but extra 3 damage with those spears that we talked about earlier.
Yeah, this again kind of leans into the idea of being able to swap between the weapons within that same weapon group. Suddenly I'm picking up this great sword and getting an extra 3 damage regardless of what sword I'm doing or using in combat. It's just great. You're going to just flat out be doing more damage than everyone at this point, because you're hitting more often and you have the weapon specialization, and probably critting a lot more often too. And the fun part about your weapon specialization is it gets doubled on a crit as well.
Now, at 9th level, I think you get maybe my favorite thing in the 2nd edition fighter, other than, of course, starting off with expert and getting master in weapons real quick. You get combat flexibility. And this has so much of the brawler flavor from 1st edition that I feel like it must be intentional. When you make your daily preparations, you can pick one extra fighter feat of 8th level or lower, and boom, you have it until the next day.
I think I would agree that it's probably my favorite class feature beyond just, really good at proficiency with your weapons. It's so useful. It helps kind of ease up the feeling of, there's too many feats that I need for this particular character that I'm playing. Oh, suddenly I just get a free one that I can kind of use here and there. You might choose the one feat with your combat flexibility the first time you get it and never swap it out. That's fine. Or you can keep swapping it in and out as you need it. It's so useful. It's so flexible. It's great. I I love it very much, especially once you get to higher levels and get to take advantage of that a bit better.
At 9th level, your proficiency in Fortitude increases to Master with Juggernaut. At 11th level, your proficiency with Armor increases to Expert with Armor Expertise.
And you get to play, you are one of the only two classes in the game that gets to play with Armor Specialization effects, the other one being the Champion. Those are just extra little bits you get when you're wearing either medium or heavy armor. So, for example, if you're wearing plate armor, it gives you a resistance to slashing damage while you're wearing plate armor, just because you're able to avoid those blows a bit better.
Now answer this question for me, Luis, because I'm sure other people out here are thinking the same thing as me. At 11th level, you get Fighter Expertise, so your proficiency rank for Fighter Class DC increases to Expert. Does anything in the game exist yet that actually uses your Fighter Class DC?
No, I don't think it does yet, but the designers have been really good about future-proofing a lot of stuff. They know that eventually someone will either Paizo themselves or a third party will come out with something that requires using your Fighter Class DC. That is a fighter ability. In fact, I know that there are abilities now that can use your class DC that aren't class feats. Going back to the dwarf, there is a dwarf heritage that you can take that gives you a once-a-day ability to kind of blow up with like fire or electrical energy, whatever, elemental energy you like. And it says, oh, to determine the DC for this ability, either use your spellcasting DC if you have that or your class DC, whichever you prefer, whichever is higher. So there are already parts of the game that use it. Just nothing that the fighter gives you that uses it at the moment.
At level 13, you get the big dollars. You can pick a weapon group again, spears, swords, bows, and you can be legendary proficiency in it.
Everything else increases to master at this point, so any other weapon you might want to use, it's still probably going to be doing pretty good, but you're legendary. You're the only class that gets legendary proficiency with weapons, and you get it so early. It feels like they're giving it away just way too early, and it's so much fun when it finally happens, just because your proficiency is so high, and you're kind of outpacing everyone at this point.
15th level, you get good old evasion. You know it. You love it. At level 15, you also get greater weapon specialization. So if you're legendary with your weapons, boom, extra 8 to damage.
It's a massive boost in damage. There's not a lot of ways to boost your damage in Pathfinder 2nd Edition. Usually you get extra damage dice. So this is a huge amount. 8 doesn't sound like much, but it really is when it comes to the way the game math works.
Level 15, improved flexibility, allows you to, again, pick an 8th level or lower fighter feat to know it that day, and another feat, a 14th level or lower. Even greater flexibility. You are ready for any fight if you have time to prepare for it.
Yeah, it just gets better. There's nothing more to say on that.
At 17th level, your proficiency in armor becomes master, and at 19th level, you are nigh unmatched with any weapon. Your proficiency ranks for all weapons becomes legendary, except for advanced weapons. That's still just master.
Yep, and it also says your fighter class DC proficiency increases to master for if that comes up. But lots of cool stuff. Obviously, lots of stuff focused on combat. But not all of it is, you know, just straight up combat. Bravery is pretty interesting. Getting your armor training up a bit to give you extra abilities with the armor specialization is fun. It's a little bit more than I think people would expect from a quote unquote fighter or quote unquote warrior class for the especially if you compare it to Pathfinder 1st Edition, where you were getting maybe bravery and then just a bunch of feats forever. You're getting kind of cool stuff here at this point.
And I love how both Juggernaut and Evasion, which increase your proficiency ranks with Fortitude and with Reflex, both of them allow you to just declare a critical success when you roll a regular success. This is a big deal against spellcasters.
Yep, absolutely. And it also kind of leans into that idea of just being able to survive anything in combat that they throw at you beyond, you know, getting your mind taken over, which is, hey, that's not normal combat. That's weird magic stuff. It's great. I love it. I love how all of the classes are getting stuff like this, but it's just pretty cool to see, especially because you might be a strength-based fighter and not have a lot of dex, but your reflexes eventually are still going to be pretty good because you're so used to combat.
Now, this is a lot of mechanics. These are a lot of crunchy things that the fighter gets. But what does it look like when it's time to put pencil to paper? Today, we have prepared two builds for you that we think are pretty interesting that we're going to talk about.
Yep. Should I go first or do you want to go first?
Go ahead.
Okay. Well, because the fighter gets two different key ability scores to choose from when creating your character, first off, we decided to make a strength-focused fighter and a dex-focused fighter, and I took the strength-focused option here. So we're going to run you down about 10 levels worth of feats and explain why we chose that and what cool stuff you can do. So first level, as a strength-based fighter, I'm going to take the sudden charge feat, which is probably my favorite first level fighter feat, maybe my favorite fighter feat in the entire game at this point. It's just so useful. You stride twice, you move twice, and then can attack someone at the end of that. And it plays with the new action economy. It lets you kind of get into combat right away, like a fighter might want to do. And it's really pretty useful for most fighter builds, except if you're, you know, trying to stay in range, you're using a bow or whatever the case might be. Any melee build will probably benefit from sudden charge if you're willing to take it. At second level, I'm going to take the brutish shove feat. Oh, I guess I should say I'm focusing more on like a two-handed fighter. So anything that is using pole arms or great axe, great sword, big, strong, tough weapons with two hands. So brutish shove requires you to be wielding a two-handed melee weapon. What you do is you make a strike. If you hit, that creature becomes flat-footed until the end of your turn. And depending on the things you're doing, will just at the very least help you keep attacking if you so like, if you so desire, because hey, the enemy's now flat-footed, it's a little easier to hit them. Or this is a thing I've actually seen my players do. There's a rogue reaction you can take at higher levels that let you make a melee attack once your an ally that is threatening the same creature succeeds at an attack, so you get an opening. What you can do is, with brutish shove, make an opening, make that creature flat-footed, and then your buddies can attack and take advantage of that. At fourth level, I'm going to take the powerful shove feat, which lets you use your brutish shove against creatures up to two sizes larger than you. At sixth level, there's not much I want to take in particular, so I'm going to use my sixth level feat to take a fourth level feat, because I can do that, and I'm going to take the knockdown feat, which kind of leans into the idea of just being big and strong. You can use this feat to attack someone and then get a chance to trip them, knock them down. At eighth level, I'm going to take the sudden leap feat. I've been focusing on strength. I probably have been focusing on the athletic skill. This will let me jump around the battlefield very easily. And once ninth level rolls around, I'm going to use my combat flexibility, actually, to get another eighth level feat and take the felling strike feat, which lets you attack someone that's in the air. And if it hits, if you hit a flying creature, for example, they get knocked down towards the ground up to 120 feet of distance. You could potentially knock a flying creature back down to the ground and get them in a spot where the rest of your allies can attack. I've actually seen this to great use. The sudden leap feat specifically says if you're using the sudden leap feat, you can actually do a felling strike at the end of it as all part of your big jump. And it's a really cool thing to see. I had my player who's playing a fighter right now do this just at my last game and knock down a flying creature. And it was pretty awesome. And finally, at 10th level, I'm going to take improved knockdown. So when I hit with a strike using knockdown, I just automatically trip people. And if I'm using a two-handed weapon, it deals more damage when they get knocked down. So it's all about knocking people down, knocking people around. It's got a little bit of combat battlefield control and just will be doing a lot of damage. That's what strength is for, right?
So my build is inspired by Corellon, the wayward elven queen, the scourge of the Skaven. This is a character from one of my favorite IPs, Warhammer, and from the video game Vermintide. So as I'm going to make this character, she's going to be a woodland elf. She's going to have ancestral longevity and expert longevity. And she's going to have ageless patience. These longevities give her the ability to pick up new skills that she might have forgotten because she's lived a long time. And part of this build is going to be focused on being kind of a switch hitter, being able to be whatever the party needs when the party needs it. So if they know they're coming up across a crumbling ruin full of arcane secrets, maybe Corellon's going to remember some of the arcane knowledge she forgot. Following in the footsteps of being a switch hitter, I'm going to make her good at both archery and fighting with one kind of light weapon. So she's going to have a longbow and she's going to have a short sword. With that longbow, she's going to use point-blank shot so that she can hit things that are within her volley range a little bit easier. She's going to get double shot and triple shot so that she can fire three arrows and all at the same target. And using combat flexibility at 9th level, she's going to sit on felling strike as well, because being able to shoot a flying target out of the air so that your allies can team up on it is always useful. But again, with combat flexibility, if she knows she's going up against something that isn't flying, she might switch it out for something different, something like incredible aim. For her one weapon feat with a short sword, she's going to take dueling parry, which requires you to have one weapon and one hand free. She's going to take dueling riposte to, again, get more AC when parrying and to get the chance to maybe riposte when somebody critically misses. And she's going to take agile grace as her 10th level feat. That way her multi-attack penalty only goes up in increments of 3. So she's normal, -3, -6 when she's stuck in with a short sword. What I like about this build is that it takes what the fighter's good at, flexibility, and just turns it up to 11. No matter what the situation is, no matter what the campaign is, this build is going to be able to get the skills it needs and get the feats it needs to deal with that situation. It's good at range. It's good up close. It has a good AC. I was so inspired by this build, I'm probably going to start running it in PFS.
That's great. It's amazing just seeing like how different these things are, but already you can tell that, oh yeah, these are all fighters. That you can only do this with fighters. If you wanted to maybe do the thing I built, you could probably do something like that with a barbarian, but obviously your character build is fighter only. There's only... only a fighter could be able to pull off something like that, being able to switch between archery and melee combat so easily. Actually, before we move on to our questions, I think I wanted to take a look real quick at the 20th level feats for the fighter. I think it's just fun to look at these. Pathfinder 2nd Edition might see a lot more characters getting to 20th level, especially because the Adventure Paths are now going to 20th level. The math is easier to work with at higher levels. We'll see. Maybe more people play with these. But the fighter has 2 20th level feats available in the core rulebook and actually 1 secret 20th level feat from one of the APs at the moment. So the first one you see is Boundless Reprisals. It says at the start of each enemy's turn, you gain a reaction that you can use only during that turn. So you can use Attack of Opportunity against anyone, or if you have your shield, you can shield block against every combat or every opponent's attack. It's pretty neat. The other thing I think which is pretty neat is called Weapon Supremacy, which says you're permanently quickened. You just, as if you're under the effects of haste, for example, forever, but you can only use that extra action to strike. It's just you will attack a lot more often, and even with your multiple attack penalty, because you're legendary, you're probably still going to be doing pretty decently, especially if you've done like Lauren and taken something like Agile Grace, where your multiple attack penalty is lessened. But the one I wanted to talk about is a secret 20th level feat from the Age of Ashes adventure path. At the end of the 6th adventure, they have a 20th level feat for every class. And that one, let me pull it up for you here, it's really cool. I don't know if you've seen it, Lauren, but I'm going to read it to you, and I think you're going to fall in love.
I'm very excited. I am ready to fall in love. Please don't break my heart.
It's called Ultimate Flexibility. It says, your experience keeps you on your toes, making you adaptable to even the most dangerous challenges. When you gain a fighter feat using combat flexibility, you now gain 3 fighter feats instead of 2. The first one still has to be 8th level or lower. The second one has to be 14th level or lower. And the third one can be up to 18th level.
Wow.
In addition, you can adapt to the battlefield's challenges by spending 1 hour to train. If you do, you reselect the feats you chose with combat flexibility as if you had made your daily preparations.
All right. There's an enemy marching on the town. They've got a whole bunch of griffins. You've got 1 hour before they get here. No problem. I got this.
Yep. Just whatever you want. Every hour you swap out 3 of your feats and have yourself ready for whatever you need.
And with that, it's time to hear from you, dear listeners. We're going to be taking some of your questions and answering them right now. Our first one is from our patron, Dragon Elvish. When creating a pregen, how do I make a fighter who is more than just a weapon user?
So, obviously, you can just use flavor for a lot of this. You can say, oh, hey, I used to be a doctor and then had to take up arms, and now I know how to fight. But the mechanics are here to supplement that as well. Fighters, as we mentioned earlier, get a lot of skill training, at least compared to what they did in first edition. So if you wanted to focus on something like medicine or nature or arcana, you probably have the skill training available to do that to make you more interesting. The way the fighter works, you're kind of going to be doing a lot of weapon stuff no matter how hard you try, but you can definitely branch out very easily with the way Pathfinder 2nd Edition enables that.
And I think a good place to start from is thinking, or more like not thinking, okay, I'm going to be a fighter who uses a great axe. Be thinking, okay, I'm going to be a baker who happens to use a great axe. You know, you don't have to lead with fighter weapon. You can lead with something else. For example, my Corellon build is the Wayward Queen of the Elves who left her kingdom. What else is she? Oh, well, she's also an archer. She's also a duelist. You don't have to lead with that, though.
Our next question here from our patron, Zai Tiefler. It says, Paizo has stated an emphasis on keeping customization in Pathfinder 2nd Edition, and the fighter has typically earned the title of, you know, the least flavorful, the most basic, so on, of all of the classes. What insights do you have for making a distinct, flavorful fighter from a mechanical standpoint?
I think that a lot of the things that we discussed about the flexibility and how to achieve that flexibility is really one of these mechanical standpoints that's already baked into the class. But another thing to consider to make your fighter distinct and flavorful is to have a look at the archetypes. I love how each base class in 2nd edition is also an archetype. So if you're not crazy about any of your level 2 or level 4 fighter feats, boom, just slap a druid on it. That's now an interesting fighter.
Yeah, absolutely. I think another way you could do it is take a look at the weapons that are available in the game. The design team has done a really good job about making every weapon very distinct and unique. They all have their own variety of traits. So if you find an interesting weapon or just something that seems kind of out there compared to what you're used to seeing, your long swords and your great axes and stuff, maybe you decide you're going to fight with darts, or you're going to fight with 2 hatchets, or whatever the case might be. You can find a way to grab those weapons and make them work really well with the fighter, and suddenly you're just more interesting. If all of the rest of your flavor was just, oh, I'm just a soldier, but I happen to fight with 2 hatchets and I throw them all around and stuff, that's already pretty mechanically interesting once you get the build going. So find something cool that you want to do, and the fighter will find a way to help you do that.
From patron Undead Fish, while fighters can be from anywhere, are there any specific regions of Galarian known for certain fighting styles? And this is really going to be a you question, Luis.
Yeah, so Galarian does have lots of different fighting styles, and They sometimes will map perfectly to the fighter. Some of them might be better suited for other classes, but I think a fighter could work for any of them. But a few I want to mention are the Ulfin Guard. They're the guards from the lands of the Lindorm Kings and other Ulfin people who are brought into Tal'Dor to serve as bodyguards for nobility. And they're all about protecting their ward. And that would be something you could replicate perfectly with, you know, the shield feats and things like that. I know Ustalav has a dueling school, so if you want to do some dueling, that you might come from there. Lauren, earlier when we were talking, you mentioned the Aldori sword lords, so they fight with a very specific type of weapon. But I think you could also go into something like the fighting schools in Jalmare. They're kind of monk martial arts styled schools, and still be a fighter that comes from there. You might not have key abilities like a monk will have, or the cool ways to like slide down a wall and avoid damage, but you can still punch really well because the fighter is still just as good with unarmed weapons, with unarmed attacks, as they are with any other weapons. So if you wanted to be from a fighting school like that, you could do so. So check out the Houses of Perfection, the Aldori Sword Lords, the Ulfin Guard. Those all would be great places to look at. If you're interested in checking out any of these fighting styles or seeing a lot more, I recommend checking out In Inner Sea Combat. It's one of the Pathfinder campaign setting books from first edition. The rules won't work for second edition, but all the flavor still works just fine. So that's a perfect resource for finding your perfect fighting school or fighting style to grab.
And since it's a little bit dated, you could probably find it on the cheap. From user Andrew Mullen, I like playing characters with magic because it gives you a diverse tool set for making up new flavorful descriptions. Now, Luis, personally, this is me in a nutshell. I am constantly, I never call a spell by its actual name. For example, one of my characters is a fire sorceress. I don't cast Magic Fang. I cast Hot Hands by giving people high fives. And from Andrew Muller says, I find with martial characters, I can't get the same experience by saying I hit this way and then I hit it this way. What are some ways I can up my flavor game with these non-magical martial characters?
Well, I think first and foremost, you can always just find interesting ways to describe things that are fun, but you might use the environment around you. If you're against a wall, for example, you might say, hey, I jump off the wall to get kind of some leverage and do my attack, just to make it more interesting and more dramatic. The other thing I would recommend, and this requires your GM working with you a bit more, is asking how your opponent fights and using that as a kind of a back and forth. Oh, the ogre's coming at me with a big club. Okay, he swings the big club, and then this is when you get your chance to, on your turn, explain what's going on. Okay, he swung the club down, and I'm gonna weave between his arms and get under him and kind of stab at his belly or whatever the case might be. Depending on how the battle is going, other combatants doing different things might influence how you describe your things. If you're surrounded, you might explain how you're dodging all the attacks from all of your attackers. It would require a bit of work and keeping tabs on everything that's going on in combat, but I think it could be pretty fun, and it might make you more engaged with everything if you have to keep track of where everyone is and how you're going to explain dodging their attack and then retaliating against that.
And you're not wrong that hitting from the left and then hitting from the right isn't super flavorful, but you can describe it in really elaborate ways. I'm going to puncture his rib cage with a stab from my longsword, and then I'm going to come down for a diagonal chop across his neck. And you can also write down a lot of different ways you can attack to kind of build that list of flavorful weapon swings and kind of have them ready for you in game. And on top of that, flavor in any tabletop role-playing game is a team effort between the player and the dungeon master. You can describe that you want to puncture the rib cage. You're going to get more mileage if your GM is ready to go. It slides in deep and nicks his lung. He's going to have trouble breathing for the rest of his life. Suddenly, you've got a little bit more flavor if your GM is prepared to do that.
Right, and we got one more question here from user the Joker plays. Yes, in any popular culture, the fighter style with multiple enemies is to balance their fight. It's how it's done in real life, too. You block on both sides and attack on both sides. That produces a cool scene. However, in tabletop RPGs, you're motivated to just swing at one enemy until it's dead, as an enemy with one hit point is just as powerful and is just as dangerous as one with 30 hit points. How do you solve that narrative dissonance with what's happening to make fight scenes more evocative, realistic, and akin to popular culture fights, like something from Lord of the Rings, where there are lots of enemies?
And again, I think this is going to come back down to the interplay between the player and your game master. Your game master should be describing people at one hit point as on the edge of their life. They're woozy, they're having trouble keeping their sword up, but they're still going to swing it at you, versus the one at full health who's fit and hearty and giving you mean looks. On top of that, you can do like Luis said earlier. You can jump on top of the table and then come down with a swing. When you get missed narrowly by attacks, you can parry it. You can duck under it. You can pick up a stool and block it with a stool. These are just... You just have to come up with flavor. And then that will really solve a lot of your issues with evocatism. Is that a real word?
Sure. Now it is. You did it.
I did it.
I think from a GM perspective, if you want to kind of emulate those kinds of fights, one thing you could do is take a page out of first edition's book and make something like a troop, which is basically a swarm, but of medium creatures or bigger. 30 soldiers all at once represents a troop. You could have a troop be a singular creature that has one pool of hit points, and attack against them takes out one or two of the guys in the troop at once. It's still one creature that takes up, you know, it's one creature space in the battlefield, but you can use that to let your players attack 30, 40, 50 opponents at once when by the stats it's just one tough monster. And you could even grab something like a troll, use its stats and say, ah, this is actually 20 bandits at once, and you know, use that to fight off a bunch of guys at once, and when it's down to its last few hit points, it's down to just one or two bandits at that point.
And this is an idea that I think just works out so well in game when it's executed properly, because this lets your characters really feel powerful. They're not just whittling down the HP from a monster. Your fighter attacks and it downs a guy, and now when your characters learn that that is what's happening, they kind of have a little bit more permission to say, I behead the person, because they know that a hit is going to deal a death. Now, that's about all the time we have for questions today. Make sure you check out the rest of the great content on the No Direction Network. If you like this show or any of the other content on No Direction Network, consider supporting us on Patreon at patreon.com/nodirection.
Until next time, I'm Luis.
And I'm Lauren.
Thanks for listening to Legend Lore. And as always, it's been legendary.